This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're continuing our coverage of the Safety Act, and particularly one of its provisions known as the Pretrial Fairness Act, a law that gained notoriety last year in part because Republicans attempted to use it as a wedge in the 2022 elections. As a reminder, this law grew out of the racial justice protests following the killing of George Floyd in 2020. It was signed into law back in 2021 by Governor J.B. Pritzker and amended late last year. Backers say it's aimed at ending systemic racism in the criminal justice system. Critics say it's pro-criminal and anti-police. A major provision of the law is the end of cash bail in Illinois, but in October, several county prosecutors filed a lawsuit arguing the law violated the Illinois Constitution. And just before the new year, after a Kankakee county judge ruled for about 60 counties in Illinois that was in fact the case, the Illinois Supreme Court stepped in to prevent the cash bail aspect of this law from going into effect statewide until it can hear arguments and an appeal in that dispute. Joining us now to talk more about what this means are three people who work in and around the criminal justice system in Illinois. They were here for our previous conversation on the Safety Act back in September when we attempted to cut through the political rhetoric to learn what exactly the law would and would not do. Jay Hanley is state's attorney of Winnebago County, where Rockford is located in northern Illinois. Sharon Mitchell is chief public defender of Cook County. And Gary Gatewood is executive director of the Illinois Justice Project. Gentlemen, welcome back to the 21st show. Thanks for being here again.
You're back.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, we, as ever, want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, State's Attorney Hanley, I want to begin with you. How are you reacting to the decision by the Illinois Supreme Court to put on hold the law eliminating cash bail in Illinois?
Well, I know the Supreme Court's going to have the final say, so any reaction I'd have has been pretty mooted because I know this will be appealed and ultimately it will rest with the Illinois Supreme Court. I was pleased with the supervisory order of our Supreme Court, essentially preventing the PFA from going into effect in certain counties. I think that would have created near chaos and pretrial practices throughout Illinois. So I think they made a prudent decision. But in terms of the litigation overall, it's not like I'm taking a huge victory lap or anything like that. I understand that this was the first step, and ultimately the Illinois Supreme Court will make the final decision.
Well, maybe I should take it back a day or two and say, what do you think of the Kankakee County judge's ruling? Do you think that that decision got it correct?
Well, I do think it was well-reasoned. I think it shows that the arguments were not, that they were legally sound and that this was, you know, more than just some kind of political, stunt, that this was based in the law. I appreciated that the judge pointed out, which I think the public sometimes misunderstands, that it was not his job to determine whether the law was a good one or that the reform was, quote, good or bad, but rather to determine whether it violated the Constitution. And I think in finding that it violated the separation of powers principle and the fact that cash bail, the elimination of that deprived judges their constitutionally vested discretion to protect victims and their families, was an appropriate ruling.
All right.
But again, it'll be subject to appeal.
Right.
It is subject to appeal.
And the Illinois Supreme Court will have the final say. And we'll get into some of the specifics of the legal arguments later. But Cook County Public Defender Sharon Mitchell, what is your top line reaction to the Supreme Court and all of the court rulings that we've seen in the past week?
Yeah, you know, I think that the state's attorney is correct that there is certainly value in ensuring that the entire state works from the same playbook, especially for something that is fundamental. As how we make decisions about who remains in jail and who doesn't before trial. Much like the state's attorney, we are awaiting the Supreme Court's decision. And quite frankly, we hope that the decision, we certainly have a dog in the fight, but we hope that the decision is made quickly so that we can get to the practice of implementing this law. The fact of the matter is that we have been preparing for 2 years, not just in Cook County, but across the entire state on moving forward with this. We know that there was a Supreme Court Commission report in April of 2020 that was the basis for many of the reforms found in the Pretrial Fairness Act. And we are hopeful that we can move to a process where we're not using money as a main factor in a significant amount of cases when we're talking about who should be in jail and who shouldn't.
Darian Gatewood with the Illinois Justice Project. I don't know if you want to share your reaction, or we can pivot and begin to talk about whether you think the legislature does have the power to eliminate cash bail under the Illinois Constitution.
So I'll be quick on my reaction, in almost total agreement with Sharon, and I agree with State's Attorney Hanley. The need for uniformity is real, as this is a massive overhaul of the criminal legal system. We want to make sure no matter if you're in Winnebago, Cook, Peoria, no matter where you are in the state, you get the same treatment, you get the same access to justice, and it's equal for all. So on that piece. Now, with regards to your other question on if the legislature has that ability, I would say yes. I would say yes, the legislature has that ability. I'd say this has been a process, again, as Public Defender Mitchell mentioned, a lot of the provisions in the Pretrial Fairness Act came from the Supreme Court Commission. And I believe the Illinois legislature was right within their powers to create a process where we can eliminate cash bail and create a system based on equity and not based on wealth.
And was, Mr. Gatewood, was this problem anticipated or discussed in the extensive negotiations and planning for this law or the follow-up that was passed late last year?
Yeah, so there was, so as you mentioned, Brian, there were extensive conversations that included state's attorneys, law enforcement, public defenders, and advocates. You know, if you look back to how those negotiations went, they went through a process from over 8 or 9 weeks of constant meeting between those parties. And when you saw that final product come out, each of the sides slipped neutral. Some conversations came up about the lawsuit, but it was the group was very intentional about keeping that conversation separate and trying to find a way that every party could be happy and be ready to move forward on January 1. You know, as you've seen, some of those folks who were involved in those negotiations have been pretty public about their opinions on where the Supreme Court should be now. But they were involved in those discussions from the beginning. And, you know, we tried to operate in good faith. I think for the most part, things are done in good faith. So we tried to stay away from that conversation. But the idea was, how do we get this up and ready to go for January 1? And how do we make sure every voice at the table was heard? And I think we did a very good job of that. When I say we, I mean the leadership. The leadership in the General Assembly did a very good job of making sure every voice was represented at the table and heard.
Every voice was heard, but fundamentally there are just some disagreements about this. And State's Attorney Hanley, let me ask you that. Say a little bit more about this question of constitutionality. Does this boil down to the sort of the power of the judiciary being stripped by the legislature? Is that the main argument here, or where are you on this?
So I think that's ultimately what the judge in Kankakee County believed. Just as an example, the judge did not believe that it violated the single subject rule or that it was overly vague. And so the issue before the Supreme Court will primarily be whether this violates the separation of powers principle. And so, you know, I didn't come here today to kind of make the arguments that ultimately that our litigation team will be making in front of the Supreme Court in the appeal. But I think that will likely be at the center of the Supreme Court's decision of whether or not this law violates the separation of powers, and then secondarily, whether cash bail is actually a constitutional right here in Illinois. That both of those arguments are fairly complex. They're difficult to predict how the Supreme Court would end up, and particularly the kind of the wording of our Illinois Constitution, and then how bail is defined both in that Constitution, in our Constitution, and in this law. You'll see, I suspect, that there'll be some parsing of exactly what each of those words mean in both the litigation or the legislation, pardon, and the Constitution. And so those will be the two, that'll be the primary focus of the Supreme Court in their appeal.
Public Defender Sharon Mitchell from Cook County, I wonder what you make of that argument that this is ultimately stripping judges of a power they ought to have under the Constitution and some of the other arguments that the people who oppose this law are making?
Yeah, you know, again, I hate to get, you know, I wish I could come in here and be more exciting, but, you know, I do think that we will hear pretty soon how the court will rule. But I think it is a merit to note that, you know, the legislature often passes rules that regulate both pre-trial and post-trial practices. We know that the legislature made significant changes to the administration of cash bond in 2017. We know that the legislature, you know, I think safe to say every session passes laws that regulate what a judge can and cannot do. You know, for example, a judge can't sentence a person charged with a Class X offense to a year in prison, right? That's because the legislator has created the criminal code in such a fashion. So, you know, we'll be excited to hear. I think advocates should be confident that the case will be made. And I think that we'll continue to see the legislator making laws that regulate what a judge can and cannot do in a criminal case.
Let me take a moment to remind listeners, it's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Sharon Mitchell, the Chief Public Defender of Cook County, Jay Hanley, the state's attorney in Winnebago County, and Darian Gatewood, Executive Director of the Illinois Justice Project. Our main topic today is the Pretrial Fairness Act, also part of a broader law known as the Safety Act, basically the end of cash bail in Illinois. It was set to happen January 1st. Judge ruled that in some counties in Illinois, and more than half the counties in Illinois, that law could not go into effect. So the Illinois Supreme Court stepped in and said, okay, pending an appeal, we're going to press pause on this law statewide. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. And we're going to go to the phones now. Bob is calling on line 4 from Marengo. Bob, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, good morning. In my opinion, and I'd like your response on this, there's only two reasons to incarcerate somebody before bond. One would be a fleeing risk, because what you thought he did was so bad that you're going to try to travel and get away from it. Which my response to that would be, last year when they did away with renewing the driver's license, the state of Illinois was good with you driving on an expired license. But if anybody went to the bank to try to remove money, you found that if you didn't know the person behind the counter, you weren't getting anything out. And I think the same thing would apply there. If you're going to flee, you have to give up everything.
And say that again. Go ahead.
And the other issue would be safety of the community. So you're going to incarcerate somebody because you think that he's or she is a danger to the community. So you're going to put him in jail and let him stew or, you know, get over it. And I guess that system works well with your telephone systems in there because it's really difficult to get anybody to contact. Hey, so if it's a safety issue, I don't know what money he's going to do for it. I mean, is he going to let me out on 40 to go have it hurt somebody? Because I'm rich, I can go hurt somebody, but if I'm poor, you're going to keep me in there? It's the same
right
thing.
Right. And that, I guess, is the heart of the argument that advocates have made. Bob, thank you so much for calling in. Mr. Hanley, I wonder what your response is to that. Bob says the only reasons maybe to hold someone are if they're a flight risk or a danger. What's your response?
Well, that is the primary factor in what a judge uses to set bond. In addition, the fair administration of justice is generally also included. And that will remain the case if and when cash bail is eliminated. So if the pretrial fairness portions of the Safety Act were to go into effect, those would be the two primary reasons why someone could be held. I've been really public about this, and it's put me at odds with most of my party, that I am not against the elimination of cash bond. The issue in Winnebago County is not those who are incarcerated who can't afford to get out because of their bail. And I know Sharon Mitchell will understand what I'm going to say next. The issue in Winnebago County is the person whose bond is set at $100,000 at 1:30, and by 2 p.m., they've got $10,000 cash ready to get out. And they could potentially be or have been held to be a danger to the community. That is a real issue that we have in Winnebago County, and it's the same different side of the same arguments that cash could not be the basis for someone being held in custody. It should be whether they're a danger or whether they're a flight risk. However, that's still the law, still has to be constitutional. And that is at the heart of this. Again, it's not whether the reform is, quote, good or bad. It's whether the reform in the law that was passed, the words actually in the law, are constitutional. And at least one judge has held that it isn't. And we'll see fairly shortly whether the Supreme Court agrees or not.
Darren Gatewood, do you want to respond to that, or what the caller had to say?
Some of the points the caller made were spot on. Yeah, I know some of the audio was out a little bit there, but the idea of having a system that has been wealth-based has been a problem in the state and in the country overall. I mean, you listen to what State's Attorney Hanley just mentioned. You have folks who may have been accused of dangerous crimes, may have been a real threat, a true, genuine threat to public safety, and their ability to raise those funds and get those dollars out and be back on the streets. And potentially not, because not everybody who's been accused of being a threat to public safety, but having the potential to come out and be a threat to public safety again, is a problem. It is something that I think everybody can agree with. We shouldn't be living in a wealth-based system. So now we have to get to a place where it lies in the Supreme Court to determine where we land on this. We are hopeful that the Supreme Court will rule in our favor, and we are hopeful that implementation can begin relatively soon so we can start helping folks who are sitting in jail wasting away.
We need to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Garion Gatewood of the Illinois Justice Project, Sharon Mitchell, Chief Public Defender of Cook County, and Jay Hanley, the Winnebago County State's Attorney. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. If you have a perspective on the elimination of cash bail in Illinois, which was, again, already set to happen but has been postponed by the Illinois Supreme Court pending a legal dispute. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're continuing our conversation on what would have been the end of cash bail in Illinois on January 1st, but for a legal challenge to that. A few days before the new year, a trial judge in Kankakee County ruled that the law was unconstitutional. It was, I'm just going to abridge it and say it was the legislature impinging on the powers of the judiciary in a way that is not permitted by the Illinois Constitution. Then, since that ruling only applied to a little more than half the counties in the state, the Illinois Supreme Court stepped in on New Year's Eve and said, you know what, we're going to pause on the entire elimination of cash bail statewide because there are some communities that straddle county borders and, you know, they would have had some of the people arrested there subject to cash bail, some not. So in order to prevent that sort of chaotic situation from happening, the Supreme Court pressed pause statewide. We're talking about that and what is next for the push to end cash bail in Illinois with Jay Hanley, Winnebago County State's Attorney, Sharon Mitchell, the Chief Public Defender of Cook County, and Garion Gatewood, Executive Director of the Illinois Justice Project. You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. And I want to go now back to the phones. Rawls in Woodridge is calling on line four. Rawls,
yeah,
thank you so much for calling in.
I know this isn't directly what you're talking about, but I guess I don't understand why judges can't be given the opportunity to determine a person's ability to pay cash bail, you know, and eliminate this issue. You know, if a person is very poor, maybe setting a cash bail that's very low, it might sound discriminatory, but, you know, there's a penalty. The purpose of bail is if a person doesn't appear, then they lose money. You know, it just seems to me as if it's a penalty, but make the penalty appropriate to the wealth of the person, so to speak.
All right, thanks. Let me ask our guests about that. And Garion Gatewood, I think that pretty much describes the status quo, right?
It does. It does describe the status quo. And we are trying to move towards a system again where wealth is not considered. And we're actually thinking about public safety. And I'm not saying the caller wasn't thinking about public safety, but the goal ultimately is to create a system that is equitable, fair, and creates public safety for all. So that's the current status quo. And we are trying to move away from that system.
Well, and I think one of the issues that you also hear from advocates is that, you know, it's often not because people who are some number of people who are arrested for crimes are really low income. It's their families that end up putting up the money for them. And this has a huge effect. We got a tweet from someone who I think she's a lawyer, one of our regular commenters, said, "I would think that the financial ability to post bail in order to be released for nonviolent charges would fit under the equal protection under the law clause of our U.S. Constitution." And she says, "People with less money are not more dangerous than wealthy people, and their families need them." I don't know if you want to respond to that, Gary, as well.
Yeah, and I know Sharon was coming off to respond as well, so I'll be quick here. The idea that, and I would agree with her in these points in particular, a person with less resources is not more dangerous than a person with more. And that has been one of the cruxes of our arguments from the very beginning. We have seen people choose to make sacrifices that have impacted their families and in turn impacted their communities based on the decisions they had to make to pay dollars that they didn't have to get folks out. We want to move to a system where we actually invest in communities, invest in public safety. And when I say public safety, I don't mean simply law enforcement. I mean public safety infrastructure, public safety and jobs, access to services, access to food. All of these things are public safety. And these dollars that we continuously take out of communities, this is why we see some of this direct and purposeful disinvestment in some of these spaces. And we have to start by changing larger parts of the system so we can get to the society that we'd like to see.
And Sharon, you wanted to get in there, Cook County Public Defender Sharon Mitchell? You might be muted.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. I think that while the previous comment describes what the status quo tries to get at, the reality of the situation is that you have a significant amount of people who are currently in jail now with the cash bond, right? So I think the idea sometimes people think is, well, just give somebody a cash bond that they can afford, and they'll pay that bond, and then you can be assured that there is something that can that will make sure that person comes back to court. And there are a couple of problems with that that theory. I think the first is, you know, it is really, really difficult to assess the financial ability of a person hours after that person is arrested, typically after the worst moments of their life. There isn't kind of a large forensic examination that happens after a bond hearing that sometimes in some places lasts about a couple of minutes. I think additionally, what we know is, like you said, the vast majority of people who put up a bond actually put up a bond provided by a woman in their life, typically a mother, a grandmother, a family member, things of that nature. I think it's also important to know that this has been studied pretty significantly, and we know that putting up a bond does not increase the percentage of people who appear in court. In fact, I think that there's an argument to be made that when you force people to put up significant amounts of money, that could, in some circumstances, decrease the likelihood that they will return to court because of what effect that has on their ability to provide for themselves. So I think I'll leave it there.
All right, and let's go back to the phones. Wendy is calling from Rockford on line one. Wendy, thank you for calling in.
Hi. I have to say I know Jay Hanley. He and I have worked together, and I'm a retired prosecutor. I appreciate Jay's approach towards this lawsuit, but I want to talk about what I think is maybe the elephant in the room. Such a huge percentage of the people that come into the criminal justice system are struggling with mental health and substance abuse problems. I think judges often use bond setting as a way to sort of strong-arm people into getting the help that they need in order to go back to living constructive lives. That would be mental health and substance abuse treatment, often which is only available to them when they are in jail because of the structure of our mental health and substance abuse programs. And so I think if you're really interested in getting at the justice issue surrounding bond, in addition to recognizing that cash bond doesn't make any community safer, it's also recognizing what we are failing to do in terms of helping people avoid involvement and prevent future involvement in the justice system by getting communities the resources they need so that they can wrap services around people who've gotten entangled in the justice system, and that shouldn't be based on finances. It should be based on need.
Yeah, and the criminal justice system. Thank you so much for calling in, Wendy. And the criminal justice system has certainly become a catch-all for people in our society who are troubled, and we don't really know what else to do with, or at least we're not putting the resources toward doing other things we might do to help them. Jay Hanley, do you want to respond to what Wendy had to say there?
Sure, there's a couple things. It actually, the actual Pretrial Fairness Act, I would say this is an unintended consequence, but operationally, it actually does not help those who enter the system with mental health issues. The way that we deal with it now, oftentimes, we are able to do a warm handoff. And Brian, I understand there's challenges, but Winnebago County, we're extremely proud of what we've done. We've had an entire wellness track that is aimed at diverting those either pre-arrest or post-arrest and pre-sentence from the criminal justice system. And we've had success. And I don't think this was an intended consequence, but the way in which it's set up and the aggressive timelines and the limitations put on a judge are going to mean that we are going to, one, not be able to assess people entering our system for mental health and substance use issues. And we're not going to be able to do those warm handoffs anymore because of the way that the act is drafted. Again, those things could eventually be fixed. And operationally, we're working on some changes that will hopefully mitigate some of the negative consequences. But we've actually been talking about that for months, how this does likely, at least in Winnebago County, this law does not help the efforts we have been successful in implementing with respect to particularly mental health issues.
And public defender, Cook County Public Defender Sharon Mitchell, you and your fellow lawyers in the defender's office represent the people we've been talking about, many of whom, as we said, have mental health or substance use disorders. What's your perspective on how this change would affect them?
Well, first off, I think that Wendy is correct that the criminal legal system often uses jail or the threat of jail or criminal prosecution to get folks into mental health services and drug treatment services. And I believe the state's attorney, when he talks about the efforts to get people services, I do think that we have to be realistic though about what services you can provide in a jail, in a box. And I think there is a very, very, very convincing emerging level or emerging body of research that suggests that providing coerced drug treatment often fails. And there's actually an even kind of scarier body of research that suggests that it's often deadly for people who have drug issues, that kind of forcing people to kind of refrain suddenly from activities and then kind of just releasing them quickly thereafter, because most people actually are only in jail a short time in the status quo, that actually increases overdose deaths. And there have been studies from North Carolina that suggest that. So I would ask for us to really think about what effect that process, how effective that process is. We certainly in the criminal legal system should be attempting to provide people the things they need, but the criminal legal system shouldn't be used as a stick to get to people the services they need, because oftentimes it really fails to those deliver those services in a effective manner long term.
All right, we are almost out of time in our program, and so I think, Garingate, what I'm going to come to you with probably the last question today, and thank you to everyone who called in and sent text messages and left voicemails. So glad we were able to talk with many of you. Sorry to those we didn't get to, but Garingate, would if, and I know all of you have been very careful to be respectful of the Supreme Court's prerogative and their decision process here, but if the court ultimately does rule that the Pretrial Fairness Act is unconstitutional, do you anticipate a call to change the state constitution?
I would anticipate that advocates and supporters will do whatever is necessary to fight for the rights that people earn throughout the General Assembly. I think the prerogative of the Supreme Court is that, and we should all respect it, but I also believe that the work that has been put in to create a system that can potentially work for people, that work won't go away. I think people will continue to work. And I think, you know, the Supreme Court is obviously the body that will make this decision. And again, hopefully they rule in favor and we get to start to see this implementation go forward. But I do think there will be conversations around what can happen next with respect to the Supreme Court and respect to the other bodies around the state. I think the advocacy community and the victims advocates community and everybody else around the state who's worked on this tirelessly will be interested in not only the outcome, but what the next steps are.
Garian Gatewood is executive director of the Illinois Justice Project. We've also been speaking with Chief Public Defender of Cook County, Sharon Mitchell, and the State's Attorney of Winnebago County, Jay Hanley. Mr. Hanley, Mr. Gatewood, Mr. Mitchell, thank you all so much for being with us again today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, it's January 5th, but we don't have a show on the 6th. We'll be remembering the January 6th insurrection 2 years on, reflecting on that day, what we've learned since, and what is next in the ongoing fight over political violence and the future of democracy in America. How's that for a weighty subject? The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson, Anaya Jones, and Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. You can get a podcast of this show on Apple, Spotify, anywhere you get podcasts. Just search for The 21st. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.